everyone. Welcome to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here week after week breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen are just dabbling in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We're not. We are smart, we are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life. And today here on the Author's Alley, I am honored to be sharing Lisbeth Meredith. You know, we share all kinds of books. This is probably the most amazing book I've had the opportunity to share here, and a story that is just beyond the pale. So let me give you a little background on Lisbeth. She is an Alaskan-based speaker and an author of her memoir, Pieces of Me, Rescuing My Kidnapped Daughters, which is available wherever books are sold. Her book is currently optioned for television adaptation by Cineflix. Lisbeth has a bachelor's degree in journalism and a master's degree in psychology. She has worked as a domestic violence advocate, a child abuse investigator, and as a juvenile probation officer for the past 20 years. She also teaches a course on Udemy for how to help when someone you love is being abused. Now on the heels of retirement, Lisbeth is writing Thriving Decoded, Calm the Crazy, and Control the Crisis, which will have a digital companion. Lisbeth, your story is so remarkable. And, you know, this isn't a work of fiction. This is a true story of her two daughters being kidnapped by their father and what she had to do to get her children back. Before I even have you take us on the journey, how are the girls?
Thank you, Dori. And thank you for having me on Word of Mom. I am so excited to be here. And that was a beautiful, beautiful introduction. My daughters live close to me. They live in Anchorage, and they are amazing women now. They truly are. They both have finished their degrees, one just recently, and they both love animals. They're both really funny and smart women, and both really have a lot of scar tissue from the things they went through when they were young. And I believe when I was a young mom, I used to think, oh, well, when things happen when you're little, like people would say to me, you're so lucky all the bad stuff happened when your kids were tiny. They'll never remember. And it was years later that research would prove that that's just not the case, that actually horrible things sort of embed themselves. They can. Traumas, too many toxic traumas can embed themselves into our bodies and into our little psyches and souls. And so both girls have a lot of scar tissue from what happened to them. And for one, it manifests itself in physical health problems. For the other, it definitely hit her emotionally, mentally. And yes, she's had some physical symptoms as well, but it's not something that just kind of we wished our way in therapy to our way out of it. There was a lot of work that we've done for healing, but it's still something that kind of life is a bit defined by it. There was life before the kidnapping and there was forever life after. And, you know, I'm proud of them because they've taken on the role of people who understand that no matter what you go through, it's up to you, even if what you went through wasn't your fault. It's up to you to get the healing to be able to deal with it. So they've really pursued healing in a number of ways, whether it's yoga or therapy or exercise, whatever. They're in mad pursuit of a whole life.
I'm literally fanning my eyes, trying to dry tears, because as a mom, to think of what your little girls went through and your background's in psychology, those first 10 years are incredible in the formation of who you are. So for people to say to you, oh, thank goodness they were little, it just goes to show how little people understand what Rick create that foundation. Please take us a little bit on the journey.
So I'll give you a little background before they were kidnapped.
Please.
Because I was that parent who really thought, I'm always going to be married. No matter what happens in my marriage, I am going to remain married, because I was a child of divorce. And I was also a child that was affected by the violence that occurred in my parents' marriage. And it wasn't all the time, but it happened. And then there was a parental kidnapping in my own childhood. So when I got married very early to someone I didn't know very well at all, I truly believed that I was going to be the one who made the difference. Like, I got this. This is going to be great. And so I had two daughters by the time I was 24, and they were and remained masterpieces. Of course, they were just exquisite works of art and probably the best art I will ever do. And so fantastic. And I remember feeling so important suddenly for the first time in my life that, wow, you know what? I had a purpose. There was a reason for my existence. and two people relied on me and loved me. But I didn't pay enough attention to how much my marriage was spiraling out of control. So there was a lot of signs of control, isolation, emotional abuse before things got very, very, very quickly ugly one day in March of 1990, actually. And my husband strangled me in front of my oldest daughter, who was two. It went on and off, and she was screaming because the person she loved the most was hurting the other person that she loved the most. And I think that's something we forget about domestic violence, that unfathomable for children. That is something they can never understand, and it is excruciating, and I will never forget her screams. When I decided to leave him, I decided never to look back. I thought, okay, I got this. I will move forward. I will move to a battered women's shelter. I will live in low-income housing. I will get my degree. I'll do whatever I need to, but I will carve out a future that these little girls deserve, and one day we won't be on public assistance anymore, and one day we will have a life to be proud of. What I didn't bank on was sometimes when people leave abusive relationships, that only makes things get worse. There are times when the unintended consequences create acts of violence so great that lives end, or that the threat and abuse just escalate. And that's what happened in our situation. Year after year, the better I did, the more control I had of my own life. As an example, when I graduated from college, that drove my former husband crazy because now I really was never coming back to him. And now I could really make a living without his help, and he couldn't scare me back to him. And so the better I did, the more frightening he became. And so the kids would go visit him when the court had designated. He, you know, of course, had visitation rights as a father. But sometimes those visits went wonderfully, and sometimes they would end with him telling the girls, your mom's going to die, then she's going to hell, or maybe the hardest thing was your mom doesn't want you anymore. Your mother will meet someone else, and she's not going to want you and need you. And then it would be followed up by maybe week, if not longer, of him not visiting them at all, where the children, and I think there are a number of parents that can relate to this, where their former husband or wife, they don't even show up. So you get the kids ready, because by law you have to get them ready, even if you think that parent might not show up. The kids decompensate when they realize their parent doesn't show up for them, and it is so incredibly devastating. And that would go on for several weeks. And then suddenly he would show up with the police saying, you know, officer, she will not allow me to children. Please collect them. So it was this endless mind mess that my kids went through. And to some extent, I got counseling. I got them play therapy. I eventually had a job at the very shelter, at the very domestic violence agency that I had fled to. I got a great job there. Didn't make much money, but it was an amazing job. Wonderful day care for the kids. I have fantastic friends. And at that time, I had no close family around me whatsoever and to lean on any kind of way, not financially or emotionally. You know, everyone had their own crises from the family we were from. So they were either dealing with their own stuff or they didn't know what was going on. And so it just sometimes felt like me against the world. And then one day, something worse than I could have ever expected happened. And I went to pick the kids up from daycare and they were no longer there. And when I called the police eventually, after I looked everywhere, tried to call my former husband, the police were like, ma'am, he's a dad. What's the big deal? Give him a break. Give him some extra time with his kids. It took me a little bit for me to have them understand that our history was not typical. And by the end of the evening, and that day, so that was March 13th, that the kids went to visit their dad, I found out they were missing. 2 days later when I picked them up, that was March 15th, that I called the police in 1994. So 4 solid years after leaving my husband, not a week or not a month, but 4 solid years of torture after leaving my former husband, he took them and left the country. And by the end of the evening on March 15th, we had confirmation, although not beyond a reasonable doubt, but confirmation that he had left the country with them and fled to his home country of Greece. And that began a process that lasted 2 years. And go ahead.
I'm serious. I have like such a lump in my throat. What was it even like? The fact that he took your children is bad enough. The fact that he took them to Greece, what was it like trying to find your children and get them out of a foreign country?
Right. Well, what someone told me early on was that it was a $100,000 problem. I called the National Center
Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and they reminded me then in 1994, that was a $100,000 problem I would be dealing with, and I made $10 an hour. So it was beyond the pale. And I think one thing that strangely enough helped was having been treated so horribly by him in the past, and the same with my, you know, by my mom and my, the home of origin that I grew up with and I didn't grow up with all my siblings because there was a parental abduction, but I learned early on to sort of detach completely and to almost go to another place and think, this is a story. You know what? If life is a story, my life has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if it has a beginning, a middle, and an end, all I really need to do is do my everything, give it my all to influence the end and bring my daughters back because they deserve that. And it was horrible, but I couldn't cry right away. I felt numb. I felt detached and cold. That kind of response, it really, I think, gave the police a lot of pause. And it's no wonder that they sort of had to ask themselves, is she a part of this? Is this for real? Is this mom? Has she done something? Because she's so cold and so detached. What's really going on here? And so, one's reaction doesn't always denote what's really happening, but it was, I recognize that it would be nearly impossible to get my kids out of the foreign country. I wasn't someone with any influence. I didn't have any social standing. I didn't have great contacts in Greece whatsoever. It was me and then a very caring community in Anchorage, Alaska. And I had good survival skills by then. I will say that I had some good things in my corner as far as how do you get through horrible, horrible things and keep on moving and try to find the wonderful life that each of us can have and, you know, find our calling, our purpose, and not a perfect life, but how do we get there? And I'd already had so much practice that in a way, I don't think my former husband was ready for that. I think he felt like this is really going to be the thing that gets her. Watch this, everyone. And what he didn't understand was he'd done already so much. I'd already had a lot of training. You know, I had done my calisthenics, so I was ready for a long road ahead. And it was awful. And sometimes I thought I can't do this for my whole life. Sometimes I doubted that I would get my kids back and really, really would hit me all at once, but I kept moving forward one foot at a time and reached out for support and looked around me and thought, you know what, my kids deserve a better life. And once I get them back now, he will have no part of their lives very likely, because once I get them back now, he's probably shot himself in the foot and lost all custodial rights. And that image, that thought gave me great joy. It really did. We had been through so much with his impact into our lives that it was time to really get serious, roll up my sleeves, engage a bunch of people across the globe, and I did, and do the work to get the girls back.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break and say thank you to our sponsors, and we will be right back here on Word of Mom Radio.
As parents, keeping our school safe is our utmost concern. SafetyBags.com offers a line of clear bags and backpacks, not only for the students, but for the teachers, administrators, and everyone else entering that school, because asking our students to carry clear bags puts the responsibility of keeping our school safe literally on the backs of our children. Safety Bags offers a way to partner with the schools in keeping them safe. So visit us at safetybags.com and you will see why we are the clear choice, because safety, it's in the bag.
We all know a survivor. Some of our friends and family have made it through difficult times. Some of us don't make it. Losing a loved one to cancer, a car accident, or any other unfortunate event can be crippling and unavoidable. But one of the hardest subjects to talk about is suicide. Too often, our youth decide that leaving this place is easier than facing the struggle forced upon them every day. More than one in four children go through some form of bullying or another. Most of us survive with scars, but for some, the inner demons created cannot be recognized or treated in time to ensure they make it through. Bullying in every form is very much avoidable. It starts with me, and it starts with you. This is Kelly Carius from No Such Thing as a Bully, reminding you to do your part when you see bullying happen. If you don't know what that is, call 403-447-4404 or go to nosuchthingasabully.com.
Join StadiumBags.com in our efforts to keep schools safe. 10% of every bag sold will now be donated to different organizations promoting safety in our learning environments. Not only do our clear bags take the hassle out of going through security, but they make a difference. So join us at stadiumbags.com because you'll see why we are the clear choice, because safety, it's in the bag.
And we're back here on Word of Mom Radio. We are talking with Lizbeth Meredith about how she found her daughters after they were taken by her husband or ex-husband and flown off to Greece, and the two-year fight that it took to get them back. Who were the people that helped you? How were you able to do this? Like you said earlier, it was $100,000 problem. You made $10 an hour. How did you make this happen?
You know, this reminds me of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, Fred Rogers, just a really important figurehead in kind of American children history. And actually, I think he was worldwide famous, but he talked about whenever there's something horrible that happens, look around for the helpers because they're there, and they truly are. No matter what a person goes through, if they train themselves to look around for the helpers, they will find them. So it wasn't terribly surprising to me, although I am eternally grateful that since I worked in a domestic violence agency, that my coworkers were like guardian angels. They were fantastic. And so they did the unthinkable. They donated leave to me. They threw fundraisers for this huge, ugly problem. I had a very influential executive director who was also politically involved at the time in Anchorage. And she was super motivated and mouthy and would talk anywhere she could about this horrible thing that had happened and just always talk to me about, hey, you have to run this like a campaign. Run it like a campaign and think of it that way. You thank your followers or the people who care. You give them appropriate motivation to help to keep you motivated. You tell them that, yes, this is what I'm doing, and I believe I'll get my kid back. And even in moments of despair, you have to remember that they're looking to you to see some faith that you'll get your kids back so that they'll want to continue to support you. And I had other friends who gave me amazing advice. And even my former husband, is Greek. And even at the Greek Orthodox Church, while there were some people who may have accidentally helped him, there were so many more, and some were intentional, but there were so many more. And I would say, by and large, the church was just fully supportive to me and felt like this was horrible what happened. I had friends from childhood whose family were supportive, old friends, my friend Shelley and her family, super interested and invested. What I couldn't believe was that the very first time I went to go try to find my kids in Greece, that there would be a group of Greek lawyers and young people my age. At that point, I was 29 years old when my former husband took the kids. So I was 29, and I met a whole bunch of, I was 30 by the time I went to Greece, I met a bunch of lawyers there through the attorneys I hired who were, without being paid, amazing and supportive and cared about what I was going through. And then there were moms another time that I went to Greece looking for my kids, stay-at-home moms, a bake shop owner who was Greek, all kinds of people. It just touched on a universal theme that children should not be alienated from their parents. They should never be taken from a parent. We hope never by death, never by anything. And it really brought people together. And so people I'd never met even donated when we eventually started having more public fundraisers in Anchorage. I went to the newspaper. Back then we had old-fashioned newspapers that actually showed up at one's door. And they weren't just digital. There was no social media. There was no sharing like that. But I went to the media against the police advice because local police started doing some things that made me think that A, they either didn't know what they were doing, which was partly true, or B, that there was something far more sinister, which was very true with one of the detectives. And so I went to the media, and that was super helpful in Anchorage. There was a whole lot of tips that we got that could confirm my story, but also could then get the criminal justice system involved. And through that, I met other strangers and kind people and helpers. And I think that's something with when I wrote my story and when I talk to other people in crisis, I always want people to remember, look for the helpers also. Like Mr. Rogers said, they're out there. And don't feel like you have to go through any horrible event all by yourself. Look for support group. Look for forums online, if that's better. Look around you for the people who have walked in your shoes or eventually who may walk in your shoes and connect, because humans are social beings and we need each other to survive these things. I couldn't have done anything on my own just with the life that I had lived. I needed other people and I wasn't disappointed. There were certainly people who were unhelpful. There were people who said cruel things. There were people who tried to hide what had happened, but they were few and far between. And I chose
I made a choice to focus on all of the kindness that was shown me and the girls.
Beyond the money aspect and things, what was the biggest challenge of finally getting them out of this foreign country?
It's tough dealing with government. And I say this, I think most of us, no matter where we live, know, even if you just have a small problem with the parking authority, as an example, you know, trying to rectify problems when you're dealing with big government is so difficult, even if you speak the language. And I had to deal with local government in Alaska. I had to deal with federal government in the United States. But dealing with a foreign government whose language I didn't speak, it was exhausting. I would get advice on how to deal with one small segment of the problem. And then another person would chime in and say, no, that's not true. You did it wrong. Oh, look at the mess you've made. Now you'll never see your children. All of that. I mean, it was unbelievable. But I was determined to get my children back legally. And so I hired a team of lawyers. And I cannot tell you how sorry I am for them, because it, you know, payment came sporadically when I had the money. They had to deal with their own country. A lot of times there are segments of the government in Greece, and that is such a beautiful and amazing country. But there are a lot of times where people just go on strike. Inexplicably, they will just go on strike. And so there was a period of time where the attorneys all went on strike in Greece. And so just as we were about to get ready to have a court hearing, they went on strike for a long period of time. So it's just frustrating. So dealing with all of that, dealing with the loneliness without my children, and then dealing with the thoughts of what if something happens? What if one of them dies? What if one of my daughters or both of them get ill and there's no one there to help them? What if he's as cruel to them as he was to me? And so those were some of the most difficult things. I was lucky in that when I reached out for help through one agency, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, they introduced me to a second agency. And there was a woman who wrote an amazing book called Not Without My Daughter. And she had, for a brief period of time, a nonprofit agency helping parents whose children were internationally abducted. And so they got me in touch with the United States Bar Association, the American Bar Association. They were doing a long-term study on international parental child abduction and the long-term effect. And so I was able to get flown to Washington, D.C. and meet with other parents whose kids were stolen. Some received their children back, some had not. And we sat together and sort of had time to troubleshoot. You know, have you tried this? Have you thought about that? All of the things. And it was amazing and powerful to meet parents who'd gone through what I had gone through. And really, really helpful. I learned that if too many years went by, the case just grows so cold that the chances of getting the kids back are just slim and none. And I knew I just couldn't be that parent. I just set a 2-year goal for myself. Like, this just cannot go on forever. And that really helped in my mind keep me motivated. Some of the parents, they were like the walking dead, almost like zombies. They had a hard time sleeping. They had a hard time working, hard time keeping their relationships together, hard time parenting subsequent children they may have had from a different marriage. Just, it was as though someone had taken their very soul, and yet they had to keep breathing. And I understood that pain.
I have to tell you, just my heart, even though I know the girls are home and they're fine and they're adults and, you know, it's just, oh my gosh, I'm hugging you through the phone, because for anyone to have to go through something like this, that another parent could be so cruel. Because in reading your book, it's not like he was taking care of those little girls.
Right.
They were neglected. They were undernourished. They were not clean. That, you know, and yet the courts the first time were, well, you know, they've been here for 2 years and now they speak Greek. So, you know, like that should matter.
Right.
Like that right. should matter. You know, well, they speak Greek now. Yeah. Okay. You know, it's kind of remarkable to me what you had to go through. I wish we had a longer show to keep going on all of this. I really do. I'd actually like to have you back because I'd love to talk about what you are working on now and all of these other things. And I'm going to ask, as we're closing this, you know, what does it tell you about being in a violent relationship and how important it is to get out of them?
Well, Dory, that is such a good question. And that is very difficult to answer. For one thing, it does show you that sometimes there are things worse than death, even when leaving a violent relationship. And I really am cautious to let people know, even when I was a domestic violence advocate and certainly as an author, and I've done more than 100 book events, but sometimes leaving a violent relationship is not always the answer that promotes safety, not emotional safety or physical safety. In fact, physical violence often can escalate just before or just after leaving a violent relationship. And it is so important that people considering leaving, that they just know all of their details and facts. And so going to a domestic violence agency, as opposed to just going through individual therapy, as an example, not that one needs it, but if one was going to therapy, that's not a substitute. Going to listening to their opinionated sisters, their friends, their uncle, their neighbors, that's not where they need to be getting all their support either. They've got to learn about supports in the community or even online that can help them suss out the details, do a risk assessment in their own lives, and make a safety plan before leaving. Because honestly, just leaving a relationship does not necessarily end the emotional or physical violence. And I think that's a really critical message I've tried to share. It was really hard for me to live with the fact that my leaving created the living hell that my children went through. And I had to work hard years later to forgive myself for marrying someone who would be so incredibly damning for my children. And yet, as research later showed in the Adverse Childhood Experience Study in trauma-informed care, you know, what happened to them? There was a big story about what happened to them. Each of us have things that we go through, traumas that we go through in life. It may not be domestic violence or even child kidnapping, but we each go through something big and important. And so people should be asking what happened to you, but also then what will you do to pursue healing, justice, and a fulfilling life? Because that is just the other part of the story. And so, you know, yes, it's scary to leave an abusive relationship, and often it's critical, but pursuing healing, pursuing support, reaching out and grabbing hands that offer support, but the right ones. I don't mean follow one relationship up with another, not at all. Don't change circumstances, embrace recovery. And that's something that's really important. And I've had a wonderful life since. And Dori, I just hope, just being here is delightful. I get to connect with total strangers and to meet you. And I've gone to 6 of 7 continents as a single woman since, on a pretty limited budget. And I am so excited for what the future holds. And I love working on new projects. And my life has really been not just surviving, but really I have thrived. And so have my daughters in a lot of ways. We still struggle with some of the after effects. We likely always will. But we incorporate that struggle into our lives. And it hasn't shaped us entirely in the negative. There have been a lot of good qualities that come from embracing that struggle.
On that note, that's a wonderful way to end this conversation. Please let everyone know how they can reach you, Lizbeth, how they can get your book. There will be live link on Word of Mom Radio, but just let everyone know.
Thank you so much. Well, I am so excited to be reached at my website at lameredith.com, where one could sign up for my newsletter. Like you mentioned before, I have future books and a digital course online coming out about Thriving Decoded. I'm available on my author page on Facebook, and we'll have that link also up. I'm available on Twitter. And on my website, there is a contact button that one can reach me at. And I just absolutely love to hear from readers and interested people, and love connecting. So thank you for that opportunity. My book is available in audiobook also, wherever books are sold, in paperback and online. It's available certainly on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and any independent bookstore. If a person grabs the information about my book, and make sure that you get my name correct, because there are a lot of books named Pieces of Me, but my subtitle, Rescuing My Kidnapped Daughters, is important to know, and people can order my books anywhere.
And I encourage you to. It is actually an amazing story. You are a wonderful writer. You really
are. Thank you so much, Dori. Thank you. I have loved being here today.
I have loved sharing you. And I thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. For all of us here at Word of Mom Radio, thank you. I encourage you to get this book. It's a really good book. And it's an amazing story. So, Lizbeth, again, thank you so much for sharing. We're going to close out with our fabulous theme song from Smith Sisters Bluegrass. So until next time, this is Dori DiCarlo saying go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now.